Welcome back to the Farm to School podcast, where you will hear stories of how you thrive and farmers prosper when we grow, cook, and eat delicious, nutritious, local food in schools.
Hey, everyone. We are your hosts, Michelle Markestein.
And I'm Rick Sherman. We're Farm to School coordinators with the state of Oregon.
So this is number 404 of a special series. From Rick was on assignment, right, at the Growing Schools Garden Summit in San Diego, California, 2024.
Yes, and everyone asked me, where's Michelle? They just wanted to talk to you. So
I actually have an excuse. It was also the Oregon School Nutrition Association's annual conference. And if folks, the School Nutrition Association is a national but also state level organization. And so while you were working on one component of farm to school, getting kids, right? That's the how you thrive. I was also working on the how farmers prosper by making market connections with folks who buy the food at school.
Yeah, and about that, it looks like we're doomed because this will always be the same weekend. So that's okay. I'll just go to the Oregon State Nutrition Association every other year. And I'll go to the school garden one every other year. So I think I'm at peace with that.
That's some really good life planning right there.
Yeah, thank you. Life plan of conferences. So it really worked for the best. But with that in mind, this is our last of the four-part series. So three more people to go.
Stories from the field. Let's hear them.
Okay. Enjoy, everybody. So I am here with Matt Sablom, and Matt, you are our very first international guest we've had on this. Matt, please tell us about yourself and where you're located at. Well, I know you're in San Diego right now, speaking to me, but where are you normally located at?
Yeah, I work for on Guam Department of Education.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're my counterpart.
Yes.
So you're the farm to school person for Guam Department of Education, right?
Yes.
Okay. Good deal. All right. So what does your job entail? What do you do there in Guam?
So I'm actually part of the child nutrition programs, and we work with the food service. Yeah. We also apply for grants such as the farm to school.
USDA,
USDA grant. Yeah. And so I'm actually project director for one of the farm to school grants that we have going on. And so is this the part where we just kind of talk about the project?
Yeah, please do.
So it is a multi-year project, and we are just kind of kicking things off, starting off with really trying to reach out to all the schools and see who's interested in starting school gardens.
And you have one school district in Guam, is that correct?
We have three, but one of them is really big, which is the Guam Department of Education.
Okay.
And so that's who we are mainly working with, or primarily working with, and then we reach out to the other school districts.
Okay, all right. So I know I've heard you say you have a lot of challenges there. What are some of the challenges there in Guam?
Guam is a very small island, in the middle of nowhere. So of course, the land is very limited as far as growing, so we do get a lot of imported food.
Yeah.
About 90% of our food is imported.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're able to grow some things there, and I heard you talking about that. Well, go ahead and expand on that.
So, of course, we have two seasons, rainy and dry.
All right. And it's tropical there.
It is tropical, And nice. So right now is actually considered the dry. We're in the dry season.
Okay.
But certain fruits and vegetables thrive throughout the year.
You have bananas there.
Yeah, bananas, papayas, coconuts.
But
as far as the vegetables go, cucumbers, we see a lot. Cherry tomatoes.
Yeah.
Of course, within their seasons.
Why cherry tomatoes and not regular Romas and big tomatoes?
I don't know.
That's a good question.
But it's a different tomato varieties. We just did a taste test at one of our schools, and when we bought some cherry tomato, some tomato varieties from one of our stores, and it was locally grown, but they were different sizes. And so we noticed that it wasn't just cherry tomatoes. It was probably some of them were grape, some of them were plum, and some of them just different sizes.
Yeah.
And so not just cherry tomatoes, but yeah. And some were actually Roma, but small, like almost the size of a grape or a plum. So
yeah. Okay, good. What else? What are you ever able to get out in the field and see some of the schools and interact with the kiddos there or anything?
Yes, definitely. Yes, yes. So just recently we did a nutrition education presentation at some of our elementary schools over the last few weeks. And we did a taste test with the tomato varieties.
I was about to say tomato varieties. And how does that go? How do the kids, you know?
Of course, it was the earlier grade levels, so, I mean, they loved it. I mean, the kids get excited about it. And when it's a taste test, even though they don't know what they're tasting, they get excited.
Yes.
Of course, mixed, you know, opinions, and when they're trying it out, you see their faces, and some of them giving the yucky face, or some of them are really like it, and they go for seconds and thirds.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's just great to see their expressions on their faces and how receptive they are to it.
Okay. If there's one thing you could tell our listeners about what you do and what your job entails, or what would that be? One takeaway.
For farm to school specifically, I think it will work, but you have to do a lot of outreach, networking, because it's not school district staff that are able to manage it.
Mm.
You need to work with other partners, other organizations outside of the district.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. You know, and I used to be a food service director for years and years, and I always say, I've gotten in trouble for doing, you know, this before, but I always say, don't even do farm to school unless you tell your story and stuff. Like if you put out local stuff, certainly kids will like that and see local fresh food. That's great. But if you tell them and teach them about it and say, hey, this came from the farm down the street, or then they really they do it. So it's really good to tell your story and to market it like that. Yeah, it's good. I can appreciate that. Cool. Anything else for the good of the order?
No. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Matt, so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
So I'm here at the Growing School Garden Summit in San Diego, California again, and I'm with Leona Verbanek. And Leona is with Newark City Schools, and it's not New Jersey, and it's in a different state. Hello.
Hello from Ohio.
Ohio.
Yes.
Oh, very good. Now, I'm very familiar with Ohio, but not that town. Where are you located at in Ohio?
We are about 20 miles east of Columbus.
Okay, east of Columbus. My dad grew up in Cleveland, so I feel like I'm a Buckeye at heart.
We'll take you.
But I was able to take him back where he grew up and stuff back there. That was another trip. That's another podcast episode, though. It was so cool there. It's a really, really neat area. So, Leona.
Yes.
Please tell me, what do you do there?
So, I teach culinary, and the classes are either basic cooking skills or a global foods class, and we have a school garden. So the students are responsible to grow their food, harvest their food, prepare their food, eat their food, compost, and back into the garden. So it's
a micro ecosystem.
High school, grades 9 to 12.
Very nice.
Mixed classes.
That's good. Now, I found in my line of work, you know, there's more school gardens in the elementary level, and there's less schools as you go up. So it would stand to reason that there are less school gardens, because there's like maybe one high school for every 10 elementaries or whatever.
It correlates, correct.
But it's like, it's easy to get kids involved in elementary age, but it can be tougher for the high school. So tell me, do you have challenges there for the high school level school garden? And
we do. Once we got the program started, I am happy to say that the students passed down that to each other the skills of being in the garden. So when we first started the garden about 8 years ago, it was really hard to get us to step off the sidewalk, because that wasn't really acceptable. Everyone was to walk on the sidewalk. But the students, said Miss V, I have one pair of shoes and you want me to walk through the grass and then down there in the muddy garden and, you know, maybe I just want to sit down for a minute and there's nowhere to sit out here. So they made a plan to have paths and raise beds and they okay. wrote grants and they developed a system and now they care for the garden in the school year and they come in the summer and they bring their friends and they say this is what we yeah. do in the garden. So okay. we really have created a culture of if you take culinary, you are taking
so
gardening.
You're a by design then you're a culinary teacher then?
Yes, that's in the traditional public high school. So it's yes. not a vocational school. I am in the general high school. Which that, is a little bit unique.
Yeah, that is wonderful though. I've seen we've seen that before where we have some culinary students. Sometimes it's a horticulture teacher. Sometimes it's a math teacher. Sometimes it's a FFA
teacher.
Or yeah. science. And then you have the culinary aspect. And I love that because you truly get, okay, we got this stuff and we're going to do stuff with it. And mm-hmm. we're going to really teach you what to do with that food. So that's really great. Can you tell me what's the name of your school, the high school you're at?
Newark High School.
It's just Newark High School. Okay. What's the population there? How many kids?
About 1,400.
Oh, okay. That's pretty good size.
And yeah. I'll have about 120 a semester.
Oh, wow.
So it's a semester wow. class. So I see quite a few students every year.
So 120 in how many, is that one class or is
no.
that?
No. So I teach six periods a day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Holy cow, that's really good. That's
so
really...
it's just 40 minutes, so they've got to get in and get it done, and they do. They work hard. A sense of urgency really helps us connect to the work. Like, we've only got this 40 minutes. We've got to get out there and get this job done and, you know, get on our way.
What's a typical day look like then? And that it sounds like madness. So go ahead.
It is a little bit like madness. Yeah. So I start my first period. It is so beautiful with students with more significant needs and peer mentors. So if a student has had my class in the class, they're able to come for that period. And we do all of the same work. We work in the garden. We do cooking. We're really focusing on life skills. And then after that, I have a sustainable design class. Where we work on planning, we work with anything that we can get our hands on, whether it's wood or wool or and create with that. And then I start into foods, and the rest of the day, every 40 minutes, is a new foods class.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you have any goals for, like, down the road, 5 years, 10 years?
Yes.
Oh.
So many
you
goals.
You lit up when I said yeah. that. Well, that's great. Tell me about them.
So we really have an established annual garden, vegetable garden, herbal garden. The students yeah. love to work yeah. with the herbals. They're so grounding. But we are developing a food forest, and it's perennial, and it's so good for the ecosystem. And
tell our listeners out there that don't know what would a food forest look like?
So if we think about walking into the forest and we see like the soft ground beneath our feet from all the decomposing matter and kind of the shade overhead, and everything's a perennial. So there's deep roots going into the ground and just bringing up nutrients from deep in the earth.
Okay.
That is what we are trying to mimic in a food forest. So there's six or seven layers, and we started ours with a mulch layer and then comfrey for a deep tap root. And then we cut the comfrey and kind of spread it as mulch. And then we need to add an herbaceous layer. And we have a tree layer of apple trees.
Okay.
We need more diversity. We know that. And then we need like an overarching kind of shade layer. So we are currently starting that. We have the mulch and we have the apple trees, and they're so abundant and prolific. But when we add the other pieces, the system will be so much healthier.
Okay.
And
we
are in an area that is the Native Americans were just cared for the earth in our area so beautifully. And we've lost that knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking to meet with some of our local leaders to find them through Ohio State has connections.
Yeah.
And they have a branch in our area so that they can teach us about how to care for the earth more effectively.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I had a person on a couple months ago, and she talked about, she had the school, and it was a very unique system, and I forget what she called it. It was like a bioswale, or it was some wet prairie. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to find out, like, well, what, how do you honor the earth? You know, what, you know, rather than rip it out and do something and to mitigate it, it's like, what should you grow there? What did the mm-hmm. native population grow there 100 years ago? So she found that out. She went and had them come on and say, oh, this is what we would do. We would move stuff here, and then during the wet season, we'd come back to this area. And so that's what they do. It's just like, well, why we should honor that.
Yes.
So that's that. I'm really glad you brought that up. That's really cool.
That's the hope, that we can bring those voices back and that knowledge back to our area.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is wonderful. Well, do you have any questions for me? Anything good of the order? One thing I'd like to ask is that what's the one thing you would like the listeners to know about what you do? What excites you about teaching the kiddos?
I would say for the high school population, just stopping to look at them and listen to them and say, what do you need today? And have available for them sunshine and soil and herbs. So if my students are having a bad day, if they feel down, if they feel angry, if they feel frustrated, and we sense that if I walk into the room that way, they sense it, then I can say, you go to the garden and get what you need, and the water will be ready, and you can come back and have a cup of tea. And they'll choose peppermint if they need a pick-me-up, or chamomile if they need to come down. Lemon balm if they feel like they just need something warm and fresh. And so I love having that available to them. And I wish that all students would just have that opportunity.
Well, I certainly don't wish that I could relive any of my high school years, but I would sincerely love to be a part of your class. Go back and, you know, that sounds like it's such a wonderful place to be at. So thank you, Leona, so
much.
Thank
you so much.
You bet. So thanks. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So I'm at the Growing School Garden Summit in San Diego, California, and I have with me Andrew. And Andrew Tuttle, and you are near Seattle, Washington, and near Arlington. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, Rick.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm on a little farm there, 20-acre farm, just north of Seattle in Arlington, Washington.
That is close to my heart because I grew up there. I'm born and raised in Skagit County in Anacortes, Washington, just up the road up there. So I'm very familiar with that area and stuff. And so I met Andrew here at this conference. What is permaculture? A lot of people mm-hmm. might not know what that is. I certainly need a refresher course too.
Yeah.
So go ahead, tell me what does permaculture entail?
Yeah, so permaculture is a design system for designing regenerative human habitats, designing farm systems and villages, and designing a sustainable life on a piece of land. And so permaculture is a this design system that's rooted in a set of ethics and principles. And those ethics and principles really guide the design process. And then within a lot of the permaculture text, they'll actually walk you through strategies that you can implement on any piece of land, from a small urban space to a homestead or a larger chunk of land. But I've seen permaculture applied to all sorts of different spaces. The largest farm I know of is Mark Shepherd's farm out in Viola, Wisconsin. It's a 110-acre farm where they've applied all of these various permaculture principles on that site. They have diversified plantings and water harvesting earthworks, which those earthworks are designed to catch and store rainwater in the soil and use that to passively irrigate crops. And I've seen a lot of these amazing systems on these permaculture farms. And so that's been my passion for the past decade, is to learn as much as I can about it and share those lessons with students.
Okay. Well, and that sounds really great. When we think of, a lot of times people just, we tell people, oh, just plant a garden. And so there's some forethought into this. And so can you use these principles in a tiny, little tiny plot of a few feet, or acres and acres, or does it lend itself to any of that? You know, like what?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you can apply these principles to designing a kitchen. You could apply it to a small garden. And really, I highly recommend folks go check out one of the books on the topic. Practical Permaculture is an excellent starting point. That's the book that I teach all of my courses out of. That was written by Dave Bainline and Jesse Bloom from the Seattle area. And those are two good friends and mentors that have done a lot of amazing educational work, but they can really break down these principles and ethics and show you the design process in that text. I highly recommend it.
Okay, I'll put a link to your show and that book in the show notes.
Yeah.
So I'll certainly do that. So you mentioned teaching kids, and that's good. That's why we're here. We're here about, you know, this School Garden Summit is all about teaching kids, and permaculture may or may not be directed towards kids. So how is it directed towards students in your life?
Yeah, so I started teaching I did a permaculture design course in 2015, and that was at Alderleaf Wilderness College near Seattle. Mm-hmm. And that was this very immersive experience where we went out to these different sites and saw these farm systems in action, worked on a lot of these projects, and it was a naturalist immersion course. So we did wildlife tracking and ethnobotany, plant ID, and really just that's where my love of nature and permaculture really started to blossom. And then when I saw these sites, I remember very specifically, if we backtrack a little bit, I was in the Marine Corps serving in 2014, around that time.
Thank you for your service, by the way.
Thanks, Rick. Yeah. It was an amazing experience in a lot of ways. It was also very, very stressful. And I found myself stationed at Anacostia, right next to the White House. So I was an airframe mechanic on Marine One, and every day we were doing drills to hypothetically rescue the president if anything ever happened.
Oh, wow.
And so this was a really intense time in my life. And during that time, I was experiencing a lot of stress, and I was looking for something to help with that. I found these books about gardening and farming, and I found this book specifically, Gaia's Garden by Toby Hemingway.
Okay, I'll put that in the link as well.
Yeah, this was my very first introduction to permaculture, and I read about all of these ethics and principles and all of these special farms out there, and I thought, this can't be real. And it wasn't until I went to go take a course, and part of that course was a field trip to the Bullock Permaculture Homestead on Orcas Island. And this is a site where they've been practicing permaculture for 40 plus years.
Oh, wow.
And the systems that they've established there are really, really magical. I mean, they have taken this space that was a degraded piece of land and turned it into one of the most biodiverse ecosystems I've ever seen. It's actually an Audubon recognized site now. The wetland they restored is considered to be this sort of oasis for bird species. A wide range of bird species visit this wetland. And when I saw it, when I saw that this was really real and we could really do these things, this site that I had read about all those years before, and then I went to go visit it, and I just kind of had this moment where I realized, you know, this is my life's path. I want to document sites like this and share this experience with other folks. So that's when I got into these virtual tours of these sites. Mm. So I use drone imagery to create 3D models and 360 cameras to really capture and create these immersive experiences where students can then go travel to one of these permaculture farms, and they're in full control of that experience, where they get to click the arrow forward and move to the next spot and click on videos to hear the farmer talking about the various systems they've established there. Because my goal here is to influence minds in ways that I was hoping to experience when I was younger.
Yeah,
I really struggled in high school. I actually barely graduated high school and had a really tough time. I just needed more experiences.
Everyone learns different.
Yeah, and the system wasn't working for me. So now my passion is developing these learning experiences that are self-guided. The students in full control. They get to control the drone camera angle when they're flying around the farm. They get to control the 3D model. They get to dive into that space and get to interact with this farm in a way that no one's been able to do before. So we're also helping, you know, students in urban areas get to experience the farm in the countryside that they wouldn't be able to travel to, and they can now do that virtually.
Well, that sounds really fascinating. Is there a place, do you have a website where people can go and experience these virtual tours and stuff?
Yeah. If you're a school that's interested, please contact me directly. That's andrew@edgeperma.com. I'd love to chat with you about what's available. We've got a couple of tours available right now on our website. One's free. That's a Beacon Food Forest. Amazing site in Seattle, amazing community garden. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first site that we created a demo of. So go check that out at edgeperma.com, and I hope you enjoy learning about permaculture, learning about these sites.
I will definitely put links in the show notes for that. When you were talking about that, so many things came up to my mind. First of all, I've seen it's harder now to operate drones than it used to be. It used to be like it wasn't regulated, so you could just throw them wherever. Mm-hmm. But now it's like you go sites like just down the beach here. It said no drones in this area, no dogs, no drone, no this. And it's getting harder and harder. Matter of fact, we operate grants in our Department of Education, and there's all sorts sets of insurances and things like that, liability with them. So I imagine you're experiencing that somewhat. Also, you said Orcas Island and how serendipitous. I mean, I worked on the Washington State Ferry System as a kid out of Anacortes, going to the islands, San Juan Islands, and. You know, anytime you talk about stress, you just look out the window and see the islands go by. It was just so beautiful there. And I'm familiar with a lot on Orcas there. So it's beautiful place. And then the last thing that really resonated with me, you were talking about you were so stressed. And then when you got into the permaculture and the gardening, it's just you almost, to use my word, zen out, you know. And we've seen that my partner and I, Michelle, we talk about this all the time. There's been studies where people get their hands in the dirt. And if you go to, especially to an alternative school where there's behavior problems, they have a school garden. And the kids, like, they just, it's almost like an animal husbandry. They're mm-hmm. taking care of the earth. And there's a beneficial bacteria in there when you get your hands dirty. And they just say, if I would have known this was here before, I would have made different choices. Mm-hmm. It just changes their lives.
Absolutely. So. That's a huge piece of the mission behind my work with these virtual tours is I know how hard it is to get out there on farms and have that experience.
Yeah.
And you can't really have that virtually. But what I want to create is the next best thing.
Yep.
And I want to make it fun and engaging for students. And I really want to give people the skills necessary to replicate these regenerative farm systems, to replicate these permaculture farm systems, because they can be very complex and very difficult to understand. And so we're using this multi-layered approach to reach minds and help invigorate and inspire students to install systems like these in landscapes.
Well, good. Well, great, Andrew. Thank you so much for stopping by and talking to me today. I've learned a lot about permaculture, and I think I've just scratched the surface. I'm going to get and research this more and stuff. And I would be happy to work with you in the future and stuff. So
awesome, Rick. Thanks so much for having me for this chat. And thanks to the Growing School Garden Summit, to Sprouts, for all the folks putting this on. It's been amazing to get to meet folks like Rick and so many like inspiring educators here. The energy in this space is unreal.
It is. Yeah. Thank you again.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick.
Hey, everybody. We'd like to thank all of our guests for being a part of our show, and thank you for listening today.
Wow, what a gift to hear folks share their stories. Farm to School was written, directed, and produced by Rick Sherman and Michelle Markison, with production support from Leanne Lochner from Oregon State University. This podcast was made possible by a grant from the United States Department of Agriculture.
The content and ideas on the Farm to School podcast does not necessarily reflect the opinions of Oregon State University, Oregon Department of Education, and the United States Department of Agriculture. The USDA, Oregon Department of Education, and Oregon State University are equal employment providers and employers.
Want to learn more about Farm to School? Connect with us. You can check out other episodes, show notes, and send us your ideas for other episodes at farmtoschoolpodcast.org. That's all one word, farmtoschoolpodcast.org.
We would love to hear from you too, so stop by the website just mentioned to say hello or give us an idea for a future podcast.
Thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks everyone. Bye.